Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome our summit MC, Rose McKinney James.
Welcome to Las Vegas, Nevada. On behalf of United States Senator Harry Reid, the Center for American Progress, and the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, to the first National Clean Energy Summit. We are so excited. And now please welcome to the stage the President of the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, David Ashley.
Thank you, Rose, and welcome to all of you to UNLV. I offer a special welcome to our guests, Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, John Podesta, President for the Center of American Progress, Mr. T. Boone Pickens, Chair of BP Capital Management, Robert Rubin, Chair of the Executive Committee of the Board of Citigroup, Michael Bloomberg, Mayor of New York, and Governor of Utah, John Huntsman. I also would like at this time to welcome several other distinguished guests, including representatives from the Nevada System of Higher Education, our panelists, our moderators, elected officials, our business leaders, our community supporters and members, and of course, the UNLV family of faculty, students, and staff who are taking full advantage of this opportunity. It's a pleasure to have you join us at UNLV. I'd like to express a special gratitude to Senator Harry Reid for his leadership in alternative energy solutions, for his support of UNLV, and the vision that he sees as Nevada playing a central role in the solution to energy and as using Nevada as a trailblazer in this alternative energy search. Last night, many of you had the opportunity to hear President Clinton's remarks. They were really uplifting, inspirational, and a challenge. And I believe we're all here to accept that challenge. We're looking for a clean energy future where we reverse our dependence on fossil fuels, where we reduce global warming, where we reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and using Nevada as an experimental lab and as a model or an exemplar for all that we can do. The role of the universities are so important. We're collaborators with industry and government. We're leading the intellectual development of new ideas. We engage our students in that future. And we believe that UNLV has a unique role in these activities. For example, our UNLV research in energy includes a net zero energy home, solar power exploration, climate adaptive technologies, passive cooling alternatives, fuel cell technology, and we have a major initiative in urban sustainability. We also believe that this university can serve as a model. So yesterday, I signed the American College and University President's Climate Commitment. We are now one of over 500 universities committed to changing the climate. This was driven by a sustainability task force, which in turn was driven by students. And I have to tell you that it's the enthusiasm and the passion of the students that I think will take us to our solution. We are developing a carbon footprint inventory, and we are, within the next month, opening two LEED certified facilities on this campus. Tomorrow, we have an additional event that I'd like to alert you to, and that is the Renewable Energy Symposium, where we will be able to show much more of the technology and the research that is being developed in the university environment. Now, several of you may have tried to reach me by telephone or email last week and were unsuccessful. I can tell you why. I was up in the Sierra Nevada mountains at 10,000 feet. Couldn't reach me by telephone, fortunately for everybody. But what I saw was something truly spectacular, the natural beauty. And I have to tell you that that really brings home why, to me, why this is so very important that we get this right. And why this session today is going to be so critical to our future. I believe today we will start defining our energy future, and we're so glad that you're here to be part of that. Now, it is my pleasure to introduce John Podesta. He is the former chief of staff to President William J. Clinton. In 2005, John created the International Climate Change Task Force. He is the co-author of Capturing the Energy Opportunity. He's the author of The Power of Progress, How America's Progressives Can Save Our Economy, Our Climate, and Our Country. He's currently president and CEO of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. John Podesta.
Good morning, everyone. First, I want to thank David for the kind introduction, and I want to thank the UNLV staff and President David Ashley for making this event possible. I also want to thank Steve Caldwell and the Sea Change Foundation for all their support for this event. And finally, I want to thank my good friend Senator Harry Reid and his staff for their time and commitment to this issue. The senator does just an amazing job as leader in the United States Senate to put this the question of clean energy front and center on the agenda in Washington, and I know we're going to make progress this fall and then in the coming session of Congress when they reconvene in January. But I want to thank him also for making this summit possible. It's an honor to join you here today, Senator. And now I just want to introduce a little bit this exciting event that we have before us. As David Ashley said, President Clinton got us off to an amazing start yesterday evening and made a compelling case for the transformation to a low-carbon energy future. For those of you who did join us last night, I hope you've got your 11 items that form our agenda. I think we may add a couple today, but I thought that was an amazing start, and I think that hardly, if you're like me, it was the details were hardly boring. I think they were really challenging, and the details, as the president said, do matter. We're honored to have Governors John Huntsman, Janet Napolitano, and Bill Ritter, and Representative Hilda Solis, who's done so much on the green jobs front with us today. Also joining us are Mayor Michael Bloomberg, Bob Ruman, the chairman of the executive committee of the board of Citigroup as well. And last but certainly not least, the renowned American entrepreneur T. Boone Pickens, who will speak in just a couple of minutes. It's very fitting that we have all these great minds in one room because the challenge we face will require that we use every great resource available and that we all work together and come together as one country to deal with this. The energy challenge we face in this new century is extraordinary in its urgency, in its stakes, its scope, and its opportunity. Energy has long been at the intersection of the economy, the environment, and national security, and its availability and price have always been important factors in our economic performance. For decades, I think we as Americans were able to easily and cheaply quench our thirst for fossil fuels, but that simply has all changed. Our dependence on hostile nations for oil, the reality of global warming, and skyrocketing energy prices make our energy choices more pivotal to our future than ever. We cannot continue to be entangled with hostile nations that feed our addiction to oil. We cannot continue to put Americans' pocketbooks and family budgets at risk from the skyrocketing price of gasoline at the pump. We cannot continue to jeopardize our planet and the future generations to come because of the real security risks of global warming. The challenge we face now is nothing short of the conversion of our economy sustained by high carbon energy, putting our national security and our planet at serious risk to one based on low carbon and sustainable sources of energy. That's admittedly a tall order, but we have to recognize that the payoff is also enormous. Developing and deploying the new technologies we'll discuss today will not only result in a cleaner economy for our country that we can be proud of, it'll also spur incredible economic activity, innovation, ultimately job growth and wage growth. According to the American Solar Energy Society, in 2006 alone, renewable energy and energy efficiency industries generated 8.5 million jobs, nearly $1 trillion in revenue in the United States. There's potential for growing that by 30-40% per year in this country. we can take this challenge head on. We already have the resources to make this transition. What we need is the political will. I hope this summit can help us pave the way for this transformation as we discuss the technologies, policies, and programs that can make this transition happen. We plan to share our ideas with both presidential candidates, and obviously Senator Reid will share it with his congressional colleagues so that they can incorporate them into their energy plans as we go forward. As you can tell, I've got high hopes for this summit. I believe Nevada can be an epicenter for the new technologies and this innovation that I discussed that will lead really a revolution for our country. President Clinton threw out a challenge last night to make Nevada the first completely self-sufficient clean energy state in our country. I think that's a challenge that can be met, and with the hard work and intellectual input of the people here this morning, I think we can map a path to make that happen. Probably you're tired of hearing this, but the old saying goes, what happens in Las Vegas stays in Vegas. But I got a feeling that won't be the case here. I know that the solutions we come up here with today will extend well beyond the lights of the Strip. And now I'd like to turn the mic over to my good friend, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. In 22 years in the Senate, Senator Reid has built a reputation for himself as a consensus builder, an accomplished legislator who always puts Nevada first. Senator Reid has been at the forefront of transforming our nation's energy economy from oil dependence to clean, renewable alternatives, and the state of Nevada is critical to our success in making this happen. I know he's going to try to shepherd that vision of making this state the epicenter of the clean energy future, his top priority in the Congress. In 2007, he shepherded into law the first increase in fuel economy standards in over 30 years. Today, he continues to lead the efforts to shift from fossil fuels to clean alternative energy sources. This includes his support for a national renewable electricity standard, as well as fair and permanent federal tax incentives for development of clean energy resources like geothermal, solar, and wind. It's a pleasure to have him here today. Please join me in welcoming the Honorable Senator Harry Reid.
Thank you very much, John, President Ashley. 36 years ago, as a Lieutenant Governor of Nevada, I was asked by the governor to represent our state on a trip to Washington. There I met with Vice President Ford and the First Energy Secretary, Bill Simon, to discuss the growing energy crisis, the first such crisis America had faced, with the possible exception of World War II. I remember lines at the gas pumps for miles in Nevada, in Washington, D.C., and all across America, and the sense of panic that by winter there might not be enough fuel to meet our country's needs. This generation of prosperity had put millions of Americans in new homes and millions of new cars on our roads. Just as this boom created a record demand for energy, demagogues in the Middle East cut the oil supply to America. Governors all over our country initiated conservation efforts. For example, here in Nevada, Governor O'Callaghan ordered thermostats in state buildings set to 65 degrees that winter. He then completely shut off the heat in the governor's mansion and awoke one morning to find his daughter's goldfish frozen solid in its bowl. President Richard Nixon also called for greater efficiency standards at the federal level and for exploration of energy using the best options they had at the time, extracting oil from shale and tar sands and developing cleaner coal technology. The President set an ambitious goal of total energy independence by 1980. This should have been an opportunity to change the way we acquire and use energy. But when the same demagogues in the Middle East who created the supply shortage decided to increase supply once again, all the initiatives to use less and produce more were abandoned. Now, 36 years later, we again face a crisis, an oil crisis, a carbon crisis, and a conservation crisis. The vehicles we drive have gotten bigger, heavier, and less efficient. Our homes have gotten larger and require ever more power to heat and cool. Our lives have become filled with new technologies that have changed the world for the better, but increased the thirst for greater quantities of energy. This emergency, far more complex than one we faced 3.5 decades ago, harms our economy, threatens our national security, and pollutes our environment. Industry and labor, sportsmen and environmentalists, Democrats and Republicans are gathering here today in Las Vegas because we agree that there's a desperate need to solve this crisis. We're here today to accept the challenge of creating a clean energy revolution, and we're ready to put aside political differences to achieve this goal. Where others have failed, we must succeed to grow our economy, create jobs, improve our individual health, strengthen our national security, and clean our polluted air. In the process, we'll lower the price of gasoline, which has become the face of our energy crisis, lessening the burden on American consumers and businesses large and small. The imperative is to end the drain of the American treasury, both public and private, which flow to the hands of volatile governments who control the world's oil supply. Ultimately, our vision is to bequeath our children and our children's children with the livable planet that they deserve. If past is prologue, and it is, we know that this clean energy revolution will be complicated. But that's why we're here, to build upon our dreams and aspirations, to change the earth. We already see early ripples of change in big cities and small towns, on Wall Street, Main Street, and across all of America. The horizon we see is the horizon that others have given us. It's up to us to make this horizon a sun rising, not a sun setting. So here in Las Vegas, on August 19th, 2008, we're gathered to share what we know, where we are, and what we do next. At this gathering, we'll hear from governors, and I'm so appreciative of governors, Napolitano, who I just visited with backstage, my friend from Colorado, Governor Ritter, my friend from Utah, Governor Huntsman. Our senators and titans of big business are here, innovators on the cutting edge of technology, and labor leaders, all anxious to secure a better world. There's no better place for this summit than Nevada, the Saudi Arabia of renewable energy. Plentiful sun. Thank you. There's plentiful sun, wind and heat from the earth. These are the hallmarks of Nevada. Today in Nevada, there are 57 operating renewable energy projects producing 400 megawatts of electricity. This power heats and cools 200,000 homes. But that's just the very, very initial beginning. Because all across America, solar, wind, and geothermal energy have become more viable and affordable than ever. We have enough alternative energy projects planned in Nevada to make our state a net energy exporter in just 7 years. Other states can do the same. Our host, the University of Nevada at Las Vegas, is known for its high energy basketball. And in the future, it will be known as the leader of high energy, clean energy. That's a fact. This campus at UNLV is on the cutting edge of research, as the president explained. Things like concentrating solar, renewable hydrogen, and zero emission homes. And like universities throughout America, UNLV is securing private sector partnerships to further stretch their limited research dollars. Look, though, to nearby Nellis Air Force Base, and you'll find the world's largest photovoltaic plant, which provides more than 25% of that base's power. Not only is the power clean and renewable, it also saved taxpayers more than $1 million a year. But solar power is not just for big utility-scale applications. A recent decision by the Nevada Public Utilities Commission paves the way for companies to rent solar systems to homeowners and small businesses, which could vastly expand its everyday use. The first geothermal plant in America was built in Nevada in 1984. Now we have 14 geothermal plants supplying power to 150,000 homes, with another 7 geothermal plants now under construction. We're even turning to garbage. The Tahoe Reno Industrial Center is building a new biofuels plant, which will turn 90,000 tons of trash into more than 10 million gallons of ethanol each year. That's 10% of the total gasoline used by Reno residents, and it's all from garbage. Nevada is hardly alone, though, in these projects. Colorado is one of America's wind power leaders. Utah has 6 geothermal projects underway that will generate 250 megawatts. In Iowa, an old Maytag plant was converted into a state-of-the-art factory for wind turbines. In Pennsylvania, renewable energy has already created 3,000 jobs and sparked a $1 billion investment in the private sector. These are all reasons for optimism. But the energy situation can't be solved by the private sector, by consumers, and by state and local governments alone. The federal government must be the lead actor in this energy drama. Last year, Congress took a first step in the right direction by passing an energy bill that increases fuel efficiency for cars and trucks for the first time in 30 years, as well as requiring production of clean, affordable alternative fuels. And also, this legislation improves efficiency standards for lighting, appliances, and new buildings. Unfortunately, further work this year has been blocked by those creating a distraction by insisting that we talk about nothing but coastal drilling. Faced with record gas prices and angry voters, I understand the urge to think no further than November's election, but we must not forget it's an indisputable fact that opening new land for drilling today will not add a single drop of oil to the marketplace for probably 15 years. Even then, it will be a drop in the global bucket. It will have a negligible effect on prices at best and will do nothing to hasten our transition to renewables. I'm confident that everyone in this room agrees that we must act much more quickly with more responsible leadership. I look forward to returning to Washington to work with the 10 senators, 5 Democrats and 5 Republicans, that proposed a bipartisan energy plan that includes limited drilling. When people look in the future upon our polluted world today, they'll see a partnership of 2 politically differing individuals who came together to show responsible leadership. Former Vice President Al Gore, winner of the Nobel Peace Prize, an Emmy and an Oscar, and legendary American entrepreneur and loyal Republican T. Boone Pickens. We all recognize them for their courage and determined leadership. I would think that they deserve a round of applause. Gore and Pickens, and all of us know that the United States accounts for just 4% of the world's population and less than 3% of the world's oil reserves. Yet we emit 25% of the world's carbon and consume 25% of the world's oil supply. Oil will be one part of our energy puzzle for years to come as we develop and produce the technologies that will one day render it unnecessary. Until then, there are steps we can and should take to increase our American supply. But simple math tells us we can't drill our way to energy freedom. And basic science tells us that we can't continue belching more and more carbon into the sky. The way we use energy is not sustainable, economically or environmentally. Congress should pass a long-term extension of tax incentives for private sector entrepreneurs who are standing by ready to invest billions of dollars in renewable energy and energy efficiency projects. Congress should look to build a national smart grid, a way to transmit electricity that will reward net energy producers and provide affordable clean energy to regions that need it. And Congress should set an aggressive national standards, for renewable energy and energy efficiency. All this will happen if we grasp the enormous economic opportunity this shift to renewables will create. For example, if just 20% of our nation's power came from renewables by 2020, we would create hundreds of thousands of direct jobs and save consumers many billions of dollars in lower power bills. Each additional megawatt of geothermal power creates 10 new jobs, while each megawatt of solar, thermal, and wind power create at least 6 new jobs. So the choice is clear. If we abandon the opportunities on our horizon and maintain the status quo, 3 things are certain. First, the Earth's supply of fossil fuels will continue to dwindle. Second, the price we pay for electricity and gasoline will continue to go up, not down. Third, our children and our grandchildren will look back at this moment in history and wonder, with all they knew, why didn't they do more to leave us with a healthy, prosperous, and livable planet? If we choose to embrace this challenge, we can fundamentally change our world, which will benefit every creature and person that inhabits it. We're taking the results and recommendations of this energy summit to the Democratic and Republican National Conventions. Everyone knows the famous slogan about Las Vegas: what happens here stays here. But for this summit, what happens here must be the exact opposite. What happens here will be taken to Capitol Hill and every city and county and state in America. And when we meet again next year, I have every expectation that we will do so with a president and a Congress and a nation finally ready to fully embrace the great energy opportunities that lie ahead. Thank you very much.